Ma'am, you can have a seat. Thank you for your respect. Have you all had an opportunity to sign in? All right, you may proceed when ready. How are you, Ms. Hubbard?
Good afternoon.
Are you enjoying your new status as being a partner and business owner now?
Yes, I am. Very much so.
Very good.
Thank you.
How much time would you like to reserve for rebuttal?
4 minutes, sir.
Very good. You may begin when ready.
What happens when Mr. Spear withdrew his appeal?
When he withdrew his appeal, Your Honor, it went back to the juvenile court as a matter of law.
Excuse me, I apologize for interrupting, but if counsel could just speak up a little bit.
Just the mic.
Pull the mic down, please.
Yeah, tall people earlier.
So when he withdrew his appeal, it was automatically remanded to AMD?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Virginia Code Section 16.1, 106.1, subsection F, and that specifically states that in those circumstances of a withdrawn appeal from the juvenile court, unless the circuit court orders that the case remain in the circuit court, the case shall be remanded to the Juvenile Domestic Relations District Court for purposes of enforcement and future modification. And that language, Your Honor, is mandatory. The 2014 order withdrawing Mr. Spear's appeal did not order that the case shall remain in the circuit court, and therefore, by operation of law, the case was remanded back to the juvenile court, Your Honor. And this appeal involves the interplay between the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court and the circuit court in child support cases, and what happens when a party withdraws an appeal to the circuit court before any relief is granted to either party in that appeal case, and then later a motion to modify child support is filed in the Juvenile and Domestic Relations District Court. And the underlying questions are, first, does the juvenile court have jurisdiction to enter the new child support order? And secondly, if a de novo appeal is taken to the circuit court, does it really matter whether or not the juvenile court had jurisdiction to enter the order? And Your Honors, the appellant submits that the juvenile court does have jurisdiction in those circumstances to enter the new child support order. And even if it didn't, in a de novo appeal under the circumstances of this case, a trial and a motion to modify child support.
Well, we go back to the premise that a trial court speaks through its orders, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And in this case, was there any language in the order requiring or directing a remand to the JNDR court?
There was not, Your Honor. It was silent on that matter. And under the statute pertaining to this particular circumstance, the court would have had to say that it wanted to maintain jurisdiction of that case, the circuit court, in order for it to have done so.
But there are other triggers that also are applicable, and that's on Code Section 16.1-1061F that states that the trial court shall cause a copy of its judgment to be filed with the juvenile court within 21 days. Did that happen?
To my knowledge, there was no evidence as to whether or not that did happen, Your Honor. However, in this case, there was no relief granted in the circuit court. There may be other circumstances, and under that subsection F, the circuit court would have jurisdiction to enter additional relief, such as
How can a juvenile court have jurisdiction over something if there's not an appertaining document or order or filing or something that gives the juvenile court authority to do that?
The juvenile court in this case obtained jurisdiction originally as part of the divorce action. After the party's divorce order was entered, the DCSE asked the circuit court to remand the case to juvenile court, and the circuit court did in fact do that, and that was in 2011. So at that point in time, the courts had concurrent jurisdiction. And so the juvenile court acquired jurisdiction at that point in time. The next action that went up to the circuit court was Mr. Spear's appeal in 2013, and that resulted in the 2014 order that withdrew that appeal. And at that point in time, the circuit court didn't say, we now want to keep exclusive jurisdiction. So by operation of law, it continued, concurrent jurisdiction, where anybody subsequently could have filed a motion to modify child support either in the juvenile court.
But how without an order remanding and without a remand circumstance, what docketing would the juvenile court have to indicate that it is within the breast of the juvenile court?
Essentially, the juvenile court wouldn't have to have anything under these circumstances because nothing occurred in the circuit court. And in fact, in some circumstances, if the withdrawal is made within the 10-day period. Nothing ever even goes okay, to the Circuit Court.
And I know that you know this area of the law very well, but help me if you could. Traditionally, when a case starts in juvenile court, somebody files something to get it within the breast of the court. And then once a matter is adjudicated, the parties can or cannot decide to appeal the matter to the Circuit Court. Once a matter is in the Circuit Court, obviously the juvenile court stops doing anything because now the matter is in the breast of the Circuit Court. Once the Circuit Court resolves the case, no matter how they decide to resolve it, the Circuit Court, as I understand it, has the ability to remand the matters back to the Circuit Court. And the way that that is facilitated is filing a remand order and causing a copy of the judgment of the Circuit Court to be sent to the juvenile court, which then initiates the juvenile court having something within its breast. In these circumstances, how did the juvenile court ever get anything back if the Circuit Court didn't send something back to it?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe there was anything to send back in this case, because when the appeal was withdrawn, that meant that the operative order was the final order of divorce. And the final order of divorce was already in the breast of the juvenile court because that had been sent back to the juvenile court in 2011.
So simply saying, it upon appeal, it was, if you want to, despite anything, any order in Circuit Court, since the appeal was withdrawn, you're back to the original order of remand to the J&D court.
That's correct.
The divorce decree.
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's why the jurisdiction at that point would remain in the juvenile court. And there was a case actually cited by the appellee while we were before the Circuit Court, which was Austin versus Commonwealth, or Commonwealth versus Austin, which says that statute, which is the 16.1297, that says that the order of the Circuit Court has to be sent to the juvenile court within 21 days, the court in that case said that that's not a jurisdictional issue. If the court hadn't done that, so essentially saying that litigants aren't, their rights and their ability to proceed with their case isn't bound by whether or not the clerk's office does what they're supposed to do.
What case number would the juvenile court work under if the case was remanded?
The same case number that had been
The DCSE case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, because obviously they couldn't do anything on the divorce case because the divorce case was never before the juvenile court, was it?
That's right. It wouldn't. They assigned an entirely one when the case is remanded to the juvenile court. They assign an entirely new case. And in Fairfax Juvenile Court, they're typically assigned the JA cases. That's how you distinguish between child support, and JJ would be custody and visitation matters. So there was already a case assigned to it, and frankly, Your Honor, there was no evidence presented to the Circuit Court, and none that I'm aware of, that the Circuit Court didn't do something at the conclusion of the 2014 matter. When the court entered that order in May 2014, there's no evidence one way or the other as to what happened at that point in time. But we submit that it doesn't really matter because by operation of law, the case went back. The juvenile court already had a case assigned to these parties and to these children pertaining to child support. So any subsequent matter could have been brought back in the juvenile court as it was done in this case.
So when you tried to go back to the juvenile court, what case number did you try to operate under?
Well, Your Honor, my client was pro se at the time.
Okay.
But DCSE actually filed on his behalf. So there was the original action in 2013 where the juvenile court at that time...
Let me ask the question a better way. That wasn't a very good way of articulating the question. When your client was trying to get back to juvenile court, was he going back on the DCSE filing or was he going back on the divorce filing?
Well, the divorce filing was just the order, the mm-hmm. final order of divorce. So it would have been the existing case number in the juvenile court. And that would have been, so it was originally remanded, so it would have been under whatever case they opened at that point in time. Because in the juvenile court, they don't assign new case numbers to the same children when a new matter is brought before the court. It's just a suffix. So they would have used the same original case number assigned to those particular children and then added an additional suffix to indicate that this is a particular sub-matter, if you will, that pertains to these particular children.
Who prepared the order in the Circuit Court, the original order of the divorce? Who prepared that?
The divorce order?
Yes.
Your Honor, I didn't represent him at that point in time. It's my understanding that they had a property settlement agreement, and then they submitted the order the next day. So presumably counsel at that point in time prepared it jointly.
Because typically what would happen is if there was a desire to perfect or preserve, I guess is a better word, some other matters that may be related to the divorce action, that there would be remand language in the order.
Yes, Your Honor, that does happen from time to time. And this is an interesting case insofar as it was DCSC who asked the court to intervene and asked the court to send it back. And then it was DCSC who filed on behalf of Mr. Spear to have the child support modified in this most recent action, which was actually filed in January of 2015, but not heard until March of 2016. So it was a substantial lapse in time.
Gee whiz.
And then it's the March of 2016 order that Ms. Omari, the appellee in this case, appealed to the circuit court. And, Your Honors, also with respect to that, there is a relatively recent case now. It's unpublished, but that is Minor versus Barrett. And that was decided by this court in October of 2016. And that involves similar circumstances where there had been juvenile court cases. They were appealed to the circuit court. Some were non-suited and some were withdrawn. Now, with respect to a withdrawn case that went back to the juvenile court by operation of law, a party subsequently asked the court, the juvenile court, to modify that order, and then that was appealed to the circuit court. And in that case, this court held that it was appropriate under those circumstances for the juvenile court who had modified that order that was the subject of a withdrawn appeal. So I think that that is the closest case that we have pertaining to this set of facts. And in that case, the court found that, in fact, that was appropriate. The juvenile court did have jurisdiction. And the court also found, essentially, that whether or not the court had jurisdiction is really not something that the circuit court should have been analyzing in the appeal, because it's a de novo appeal. So at that point in time, the circuit court should have had a de novo trial on the underlying motion to modify. And that's what we're essentially asking the circuit court in this case, that it's now an appeal. It is concurrent jurisdiction because this case originated as a divorce action in the circuit court. So regardless of whether or not the juvenile court had jurisdiction, the circuit court had jurisdiction all along over that motion to modify and therefore should have had a de novo trial at that point in time. In this case, there was no evidence presented. It was a pro se litigant, the father, and counsel for the mother who came in on the morning of trial.
Taking a look at Minor, Barrett versus Minor. Barrett versus Minor is not a withdrawal case. It's a non-suit case, isn't it?
There were withdrawn and non-suited. So there were numerous, there were several children in that case, and there were numerous matters, some of which were withdrawn and some of which were non-suited. And I believe it was the father non-suited his and asked the court to withdraw the mother's. And then the mother subsequently asked for modification in the juvenile court, and that was found to be appropriate.
Okay. All right, do you want to save the rest of your time for rebuttal, ma'am?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is McRae on behalf of Omari Omari.
Yes, ma'am.
From our perspective, Your Honors, the juvenile courts never had jurisdiction to enter that March 2016 order. And the reason being is that the circuit court never relinquished its jurisdiction at all. When the father had withdrawn his appeal, the order is silent on whether or not it should be remanded. While counsel cites Virginia Code Section 16.1-106.1, there's essentially two things that need to happen there, and that doesn't happen in this case. Under the code section of 16.1-06.1, subsection F3, that states, unless the circuit court orders that the case remain in the circuit court, the case shall be remanded to the Juvenile and Domestic Relations District Court for the purposes of enforcement and future modification, and shall be subject to all the requirements of 16.1297. And that did not happen here. And when we look at Code Section 16.297...
So, in other words, the shall language in 16.1-106.1F is only triggered by application of 16.1-297.
That is correct, Your Honor. And nowhere in there does the court have its order or have the record remanded back down to the juvenile court. And when you look at the entire record that's been certified up to the Court of Appeals, you will notice that the March the May 2014 order that withdrew the appeal is not in that JDR file. It is not there at all. None of the record is there. And please keep in mind that when that appeal went up to the circuit court, there were scheduling orders that were put into place, there were witness and exhibit lists that had been exchanged because we were set for trial on this matter. None of that record gets remanded back down to the juvenile court. So from our perspective, the juvenile court never got jurisdiction back. Once an appeal is noted, the juvenile court loses its authority, and the circuit court takes that authority back over, takes that jurisdiction back over. JDR doesn't have the power to do anything. And Mr. Spears, when he then has DCFC intervene on his behalf in January of 2015, they filed a motion to modify in the juvenile court, but it was improper. JDR doesn't have jurisdiction at that point. So when that order gets entered in March of 2016, we make the argument at the JDR court. We tell the judge, you don't have jurisdiction.
So the JDR court doesn't have jurisdiction. That's your argument.
That is correct.
And so in addition to that, the circuit court doesn't have jurisdiction because the appeal was withdrawn.
But it's our position that the circuit court still has that jurisdiction under that case number that the appeal from 2013 comes into play, because the circuit court never remands or sends the file back down to the juvenile court. It never loses that jurisdiction. So Mr. Spears,
under what authority would the circuit court have to act if the appeal has been withdrawn? The matter is no longer within the breast of the court if the appeal is withdrawn.
If the appeal is withdrawn, but then it would have needed to send the file back down to the juvenile court, remand the matter back down. The order does not do that. It's completely silent on the remand.
So you're saying essentially that your opponent colleague's client is essentially without a remedy. You can't go to JNDR court because the matter, according to you, was not properly accomplished under 16-1-106 and 16-1-297. But in addition to that, you can't really go to the circuit court because the appeal is withdrawn and the matter is moot.
No, I disagree with that, Your Honor.
All right.
Mr. Spears could have filed and should have filed his motion to modify child support under that child support appeal matter for which the court had withdrawn the appeal, because the court still has the jurisdiction, has the authority to make decisions for future modifications under that case.
How can you make a modification if there's no record to make a modification from?
But there was one.
All right. I'm not trying to be difficult.
Well, I understand. Yeah. I don't take it as such, Your Honor. I don't at all. You're very respectful.
All right. Thank you.
With respect, please keep in mind that this case originated in circuit court as a divorce matter. They remanded, they transferred down to the juvenile court back in 2011 the original child, the issue of child support down to JDR. Mr. Spears does not like the decision that comes out of the JDR court. The minute he notes that appeal, the circuit court assumes the jurisdiction. It assumes that. And that's really what is in the Austin case, Your Honor. It's a very similar situation in which the there's an appeal from the juvenile court. It goes up to the circuit court. And the court held that once the circuit court acquires jurisdiction, it retains jurisdiction over the juvenile proceedings until it remands the matter to juvenile court, dismisses the proceedings, or discharges the juvenile. It didn't remand the matter, and it didn't dismiss the matter. So because of that, Your Honor, the matter still remains in circuit court. Mr. Spears should have filed his motion to modify in that case number from the appeal that he took in 2014.
And you would rely on the language in the Austin case that says an appeal transfers the entire record to the circuit court for retrial as though the case had been originally brought there.
Exactly, Your Honor. You know, and it states, you know, in the Austin case that the circuit court properly acquired subject matter jurisdiction on Austin's appeal from the juvenile court, see Code Section 16.1-296A. When the circuit court heard Austin's appeal de novo, it divested the lower court of exclusive jurisdiction over those proceedings. It possessed the same powers and authority granted to the juvenile court. It continues on from there, Your Honor. So it has always been our position that that's where that matter should have been filed. As I stated in my brief, Mr. Spears, after this matter was dismissed in August, he immediately filed another motion to modify child support. So he continues to have a remedy pending in the court. We still have an issue dealing
with DCSC be a party to the matter in circuit court?
I believe that they would, and the reason why I believe that is because he's asked for DCSC to intervene and to be the go-between, the collector of the money, and they are the collectors. Okay. I don't think that DCSC is needed. I think the fact that DCSC was noted here in the appeal process and has not participated in any way, and typically DCSC when counsel represent both parties, they typically take a backseat and don't get involved.
Plus they don't have the resources
to do that. I have a question, and maybe I got lost or went off on a sidetrack somewhere along the way, which would be easy with this case. But what specifically did he appeal? What particular order did he appeal?
Okay. So in 2013, what had happened was when the case got remanded originally from circuit court down to JDR, Mr. Spears had filed a motion to modify child support.
Right. Okay, I'm with you there.
The court denied his motion. They did not find that there was a material change in circumstance.
Right, I understand that. Okay.
And so from there, he then appealed to the circuit court to get another bite of the apple, a de novo trial. And that trial was set to happen in May of 2014. And the day of the trial is when he then did the withdrawal.
He withdrew. So he is appealing the what particular last order is he appealing?
His original appeal, which was the denial of his motion to modify child support, which he had heard.
In other words, he's piggybacking on the DCSE filing.
I apologize that I was missing that
one. Yeah. Okay. And did he maintain or did he preserve his specific issues that he's appealing on? Did he preserve those in the record?
Just to be clear, Your Honor, when you talk about the appeal, are we talking about the current appeal right now that's before your court?
Yes.
Or the appeal?
Current appeal is before the court right now. That's where I'm getting.
Okay. So he's appealed on two errors. One error is that he feels that the court should have given a de novo trial. I don't believe that they have sufficiently preserved that issue for the court. I don't believe that they have. With respect to the first portion that they have issue with, the error is whether or not jurisdiction was appropriate in the juvenile court. He did not note any objections to that August order. Mm-hmm. He did do, through counsel, a motion for reconsideration.
Okay, now wait, before you go on, mm-hmm. in that motion for reconsideration, did he appeal the motion for reconsideration or did he appeal the original order?
Your Honor, I would need court's indulgence just to pull one document very quickly. And if I may have a moment to do that, I would appreciate that.
I'm sorry to belabor this, but that could be an important issue.
And I agree. And the reason why that's an important position is because this court had originally denied his request for relief, finding that he had not properly
preserved. And it wasn't just that. This court denied it because what the court ultimately opined was that the order that he should have appealed was the motion to reconsider.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, I just wanted to be sure.
Yes, so from that position, I think that he's got issues with respect to his motion for reconsideration and how he perfected.
Okay, thank you. That's what I was trying to get to. I'm sorry I sort of backed into it.
Not a problem. Basically, the March order that was entered by the juvenile court was a void order. The circuit court made the correct decision by finding that it was a void order because the juvenile court never had jurisdiction in the first place. And therefore, we would ask that their motion be denied.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Hubbard, you have a little bit more than 2 minutes.
Yeah, I'd like to just hit on a few points. With respect to whether Mr. Spear would have filed his motion to modify in circuit court, that would not have been under the 2013 appeal case number. That would have had to have been under the divorce case number. The 2013 appeal that was resolved through the 2014 order became a nullity at the conclusion of that case when it was withdrawn. That nothing should be filed in that case at this point in time. It would be only the divorce case because the courts had concurrent jurisdiction with respect to the divorce case. With regards to the Austin case, that was a completely different case from the case before, Your Honors. There was no withdrawal of the appeal in that case. Actually, that appeal resulted in a hearing in the circuit court. The circuit court granted certain relief, entered an order, and the circuit court decided in that case to maintain jurisdiction. And that fell under the May provision of the statute with respect to sending back the order within 21 days. And in that case is where the court said that even if the circuit court hadn't sent it back in that case, it doesn't affect jurisdiction. And it says it demonstrates that the failure to do so does not result in the loss of jurisdiction by the circuit court. In that case, it was very different. The court in that case decided to retain jurisdiction to further enforce and potentially modify its own order. In this case, the circuit court had no order of its own other than the divorce order, which could have been modified by either the juvenile court or the circuit court, and therefore it was appropriate for Mr. Spear and DCSC on his behalf to have filed the motion to modify in the juvenile court. In this case, Your Honors, it was almost like a ping-pong game of jurisdiction, and it's very complicated in that regard, and it's hard to follow the ball.
It will be on the bar examination in 2020.
<so. laughs> And in this case, the jurisdiction originated in the circuit court, and I'll just use my hands for purposes of trying to follow the ball. And that resulted in the divorce order, which contained child support provisions. The circuit court then remanded the case to the juvenile court, and that resulted in concurrent jurisdiction. And at that point in time, a motion to modify could have been filed in either court. Now, there was a motion to modify filed in the juvenile court at that point in time. And at that point in time, the juvenile court found that Mr. Spear had not shown a material change in circumstances. Now, Mr. Spear appealed that to the circuit court. So, yes, during that appeal, the circuit court had exclusive jurisdiction over the matter during the pendency of the appeal. He withdrew the appeal. So now we go back to concurrent jurisdiction because nothing was done in the circuit court, and the circuit court, by operation of law, had to re-remand the case back to the juvenile court to provide for concurrent jurisdiction once again. So at that point in time, when DCSC filed the subsequent motion to modify on behalf of Mr. Spear, they appropriately did so in the juvenile court. Now, they could have done it in the circuit court as well. They opted to do it in the juvenile court, and that was appropriate.
Okay. Counsel, your time's expired. We're going to go study for the bar examination now.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. We are in...